Hello and welcome to Overdose and Chill 149. I have a very, very special guest today. But firstly, my name is Ryan. I'm the Chief Experience Officer and co-founder at Overdose. And as I mentioned before, our guest is someone I feel very privileged to talk to today. Someone I actually look up to greatly, in fact, and probably someone with the only role name called Chief Gorilla in the entire world, or otherwise known as the CEO for the giant online retailer Mighty Ape. So I'd like to welcome Gracie McKinlay. Thank you so much, Gracie, for joining today's session.
Thanks, Ryan, for the intro. It's an honor to be on your show. Can't believe you guys done over 100, 149. That's quite a big achievement. So hopefully today's discussion and conversation is interesting to the audience, and thanks everyone for tuning in today.
Yeah, I felt like maybe we should have had you at the 150th, knowing that that's quite a milestone and you're such a big guest for us. So. Yeah, and I should have said that Mighty Ape was a King Kong of an online retailer, to be fair, to be on brand. So apologize for that one. Maybe just to get things started, because we will have listeners from overseas and obviously people in NZ and most likely Australia will know who Mighty Ape is. But for those who don't, it'd be really good just to kind of hear it from you on who Mighty Ape is and what you guys do, first and foremost.
Sure. I think probably the easiest way for overseas listeners who are not familiar with Mighty Ape is almost like a comparison to Amazon. So we're basically a online pure play retailer in New Zealand. Carry a wide range of products and fast delivery. So a bit of history of Mighty Ape initially was a physical store in Auckland on Simon Street. I believe that was 1995. So our founder, Simon Barton, started with selling games in a physical store. And later on opened the, launched the website, which is purely catalog with the information about games. Then 1996 or 97, launched the e-commerce functionality on the website. A few years later, decided pure play, just 100% online, closed the physical store. That's kind of become a fully e-commerce site from then on. Mighty brand was launched in 2008. So before it was Game Planet, Game Zone, it's all very much gaming related. Want to expand the range, want to do books and toys. So that's kind of the, I guess, the birth of Mighty Ape is not specific to a gaming category and allow Mighty Ape to carry a wide range of products. So that's a bit of a history of Mighty Ape and who we are in terms of, like in New Zealand in e-commerce.
Yeah, I have to say that, I think Mighty Ape, for me in particular, growing up, was kind of like one of the only e-commerce players out there that really shined. And I think, people probably don't understand that history and how long you've actually been around, but it all kind of, makes sense in terms of what you are today as well, right? And it's super admirable. I think just for the listeners also, is your story is incredibly motivational. It is almost like a Drake started from the bottom, now I'm here situation, moving to New Zealand to study. And now the chief gorilla of such a large company. I think it'd be worthwhile just to maybe just talk about that just a little bit.
Sure. I think it's fate, maybe luck, a lot of components of where I am today. Looking back, I was born in Inner Mongolia in China, bordering Mongolia. So in the 70s, there's no retail store. There's no such a thing of retail. Your life is a communism sort of environment. You get allocation of food and stuff. So we get 50 kg of Chinese cabbage for the winter, and that's it. I think for my mom and dad, the decision of moving around away from that sort of environment wasn't, the living condition or anything. It's more for the education. So I think they one day I came home. I was 6 years old and with my transcript of the preschool before I go into elementary school. And mom looked at the feedback from the teacher. Within one paragraph, there were two like typo or misspelling of Chinese characters. And they made up their mind that this is not the place to be. My parents end up there. Actually, they're not originally from there. It's a result of Cultural Revolution. So during Cultural Revolution, when they were in high school, they the country asked the students actually to experience peasant life. And then they were sent to that town to be peasants. And then I was born there. So they wanted to go back home, but the government just not having the policy to allow them to go back. But with the condition like that, mom and dad said, you know what, for the future of me and my sister, we're just gonna leave. So we're just gonna escape. So didn't tell anyone, secretly at night, took the train and went to Tianjin, which is actually where they are originally from and their family, the parents are. So we lived in our grandparents' house. They got a sort of a sleep out outside the house for about 10 square meters. So four of us lived there for several years. During that time, China started opening up, so sort of encouraging private entities and things like that. And mom and dad decided to go to south of China to open up businesses and, you know, opportunities and earn more money for better living. So we traveled with them, went to Hainan, which is the most southern part of China. It's an island at the bottom of the country. At the time, it was for people over there, they look so different. They see us like almost like from a different country. It's not common to see people from mainland. So we studied there while mom and dad were running their business. It's a pretty, how do I describe during that time, that town is quite, there's a lot of crime. It's not a very safe place, but it is start opening up for entrepreneurship. And then they did really well in terms of running businesses. Like we got robbed on street many times. My dad got kidnapped once, so I won't go into that story. But that was sort of the environment we're living in. And mom and dad, again, want us to have the best education possible. I think part of it is that they missed the opportunity to go to university at the age when they're supposed to go in high school, but went to the countryside instead. So they sent me and my sister to one of the best schools, high schools in the country, back in Tianjin, while they were still running the business in Hainan to, you know, earn as much money as they could. So I was in boarding school in Tianjin during high school years. Best of the students in the
Oh, I think we may have a technical difficulty. We'll just see if we can get Gracie back. Apologize, everyone.
In the country.
Yeah, so.
Oops. Okay.
Yep, is it working? You're back. Sorry, Gracie. Yeah, you're back.
Okay, I'll pick up the story. As a result of moving around, like, which taught us a lot of things, entrepreneurship and you know, just go for your dreams and that sort of stuff. I didn't have a residence school to take exam to go to university. And in my mind, growing up, like so much, I guess, mom and dad are stressing education, was it's not an option not to go to university. So my option was to go overseas to go to universities. In order to do that, I need to pass the language test for English, that you're good enough to study English. I went to a language school in Beijing to learn about TOEFL test, which is test of English as a foreign language. Was quite uncommon for high school students to study and going overseas for undergraduate. Most of the people are in university for you know, scholarship and postgraduate. Anyway, I passed the exam. And I started looking for unis to go to. During that time, I also worked to find jobs in Beijing to practice my English. And then the weekend, I will go to the library, go through the catalog, look at the universities. I've just applied all around the world. And my criteria, which university to go, was A, needs to be in English, and some, and B, needs to be sort of a business study. And third, and very importantly, it needs to be cheap because we don't have a lot of money. So that's how I ended up in the Netherlands. The tuition was $1,000 a year, so pretty good for international students. So that's how what I kind of decided to go to Netherlands and pursue my study over there. During the first couple of months was pretty tough because my English, even though I passed the written test, but actually practically using the language was very difficult. I found myself I didn't understand anything in the lectures. I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna fall behind. I was really worried, you know. Study really, really hard, and as a result, not only just passed the papers, but actually excelled and got really good grades. So the uni, basically, you know, there's the program you can get 2 degrees for the price of one at the same time. Would you like to do that? I was like, yes. Initially applied to go to Sheffield in UK just because it's so close to the Netherlands, but the program was putting on hold to do some audit. Then they said the Auckland University is the next one you can go, and I was like, damn it, so far away. The flight costs more than my tuition, but you know what? It's also for the price of one, it's still a good deal. Okay, I'll do it. So that's
In a
kind of
good
how.
country.
So that's kind of like yeah, like kind of say no to a good deal. I came to New Zealand in 2001 for my exchange study, and that's the time when I met my husband. It was like a sort of a holiday girlfriend and boyfriend while I was doing my accounting study here. Afterwards, you know, finished my study, and my parents immigrated to Canada under an entrepreneur category. So I went to Canada in Montreal. The tough thing over there is I wasn't bilingual in French. So it's really difficult to get a job. And mom and dad was their shop was serving Chinese customers. So helping them for a little bit. And then looking for a job in Montreal, and didn't get a lot of luck. At the end, I was just literally handing out my CVs, going to the buildings, to the reception of different offices, and putting my CVs out. And then there's one company who specialize affiliate marketing. Mostly clients are US clients, and the founders were Australians. So they look at my CV. They were quite interested in the part of experience in New Zealand. They felt a bit close to me, and then they gave me a job over there. So during that time, I kind of get into the area of digital marketing, affiliate marketing, and during that time, and yeah, lived in Canada for 5 years. I always loved my time in New Zealand. Maybe that was just a holiday thing or whatever, but I always wanted to come back. So 5 years down, I was like, you know what, time to come to New Zealand and start a new chapter. So yeah, I packed my life into 1 cube meter box, bought 1-way ticket. My biggest asset at the time was a projection TV. I don't know if you know what that is, but took half
Yeah,
of my
I
bachelor's.
do.
So came to New Zealand, and first job was at the digital agency called First Rate at the time, specialized in SEM, SEO, some of the smartest people in the country or in the industry. So I had the privilege to work there and get to meet a lot of great people and talents over there. The one of the colleagues knew Simon Barton, had chat with him and sort of introduced me to Simon. I remember my first meeting with him in the boardroom at Orbit Drive, like previous smaller warehouse. Yeah, Simon chatted to me about cricket quite a bit, which I knew nothing about, and then he took a punt and hired me. So yeah, so
Perfect.
that's kind of my start of the journey. Yeah, so he handed over the Google AdWords account, say, hey, I haven't touched this account for 2 years. Can you make it better? That's kind of my job, was the marketing analyst at the time, to start with the Google Ads. Marketing team didn't really exist apart from we have Shay, who's sort of doing everything in terms of marketing at a time, even officially not marketing, but it's like email and social media and all sorts of stuff. So I kind of worked alongside with them. Through I guess 10 plus years, we start growing the team, and the company really flourish and grow, like rapid growth period. We moved a warehouse around. So that's kind of like my story with how I came about from an environment that was a gravel road, donkeys, no shops, to today become the chief gorilla at a pure play e-commerce store, which is quite a big gap. But throughout this year, it's just sort of a luck and fate, whatever you call it, come about to today.
It's a phenomenal story, to be fair. You should totally write a book about it. You've got the right platform to sell it on. And I reckon people will be very engaged. And I genuinely mean this. Like, I see all the stuff that you're doing today. I follow it very closely. And you have to be one of the best CEOs out there. Sorry, Paul Pritchard, you're up there too. But like, yeah, you're like everything.
On
Yeah, like Mighty Ape is just on a different level, right? The innovation, just the thinking, the customer-centric side of things, which is basically what I want to touch on today, is one of our primary focus. And I know it's a huge focus for Mighty Ape as well, but is around customer-centric e-commerce,
the
right? And this isn't necessarily for the listeners that think it's around customer service. It's essentially providing the value around the products and the service and ensuring that satisfaction is applied end to end. It's about building that customer retention, that loyalty, that fan base that Mighty Ape has today. How important, from your own perspective, is that to Mighty Ape, and how has that developed Mighty Ape into what it is today?
Huge, hugely important. It's so important. That's basically made who we are today. Even though I'm currently in the CEO position, how we came about wasn't because of, I did tell my story, but really the identity, the ID and DNA of my team has evolved over this year from the founders like Simon Barton, Dylan Bland, for example, is very customer driven, and that give us a culture who we are today. So, like you said earlier, I very much echo with you when we talk about the customer centric. It's not just about customer service side of things. It is very important, but customer touch point, there's so many touch points. Hopefully you provide such a good service via different paths before you even touch the customer service, if you know what I mean. So at Mighty Ape, I guess the four areas, if I kind of classify the main areas we focus on customers, it will be the range of the products, price, customer support, and the speed of delivery. So these are the main touch points if you from a transaction, from the start of a transaction to the end. So the range, very much the early days, if people have known Mighty Ape for a while, it's very much pop culture. So we focus on the things at the time. Also, that's the passion of the founders, right? That's their interests and their hobbies, and they speak the same language as the customers. So we started from there and then make sure the range of the products fits into the customers that we share the same passion about. As we grow over the years, we realize actually there's more demand from our existing customers and the new customers. So that's when we start, expanding the range from games and into, books, toys, now the electronics and homeware and all that sort of, very big, mass appeal products now. So the range is something, very customer centric, what customers want, how can we source the good product that fits into their needs. Pricing is important for retail. People are always looking for a bargain and the quality, the good ratio of value for money. When you provide really good service, obviously there are certain costs associated with operation, but we always strive to see how we can offer the best through efficiency that we can compete on price as well. So having the range, review the pricing, the best pricing possible. Now, customer support, you mentioned we have in-house customer care team. These are our customers as well. So they have been, I guess, from day one, they know our approach with customers, say putting customers first, thinking from customers' shoes. Our head of the customer care team, biggest advocate for customers, and that's exactly what we want. So this is from, customer service perspective. Now, last but not the least, what Mighty Ape is really known for is the speed of delivery. Because often people want to shop by Mighty Ape. Okay, we got the products they want. It's like that consistency, that expectation that we can meet or exceed receiving really quickly is really setting us apart. So talking to a lot of people is like, why shop at my TA? I was like, oh, I just order, it's gonna turn up on my door today or tomorrow. I don't need to worry about, things go wrong and that sort of stuff. So that really set us apart in terms of speed of delivery. So I guess these are the four cornerstones for us to really make sure we are putting customers at the center of everything we do.
100%, and we'll touch on the likes of Jungle Express and that delivery shortly, because I want to talk about the innovation there. But I just want to go back to one point that you talked about, the pop culture and sort of what the founders has developed Mighty Ape into today. It's a very fun brand, and credit to you guys. And I can't really name a handful of people that do it, but you guys have a significant fan base. Now, it's kind of rare not being just a product, but a online retailer, online play, to have such a fan base. Like, not to take your thunder, but I've seen this video of this fan create an advert for free, I believe, and it was just this very well commercially put together video that he did purely because he's such a fan. Like, how do you achieve that? How does a company like Mighty Ape do that? Because I think a lot of listeners on this call and businesses want to do that, but potentially struggle to do so.
I guess our brand has always been seen as being a fun brand. And our staff here are having fun when they are working. So this is kind of the culture we want to create here. Look, like for your lifetime, you spend 40 hours working. It's a very significant part of your life. Why not make it something that you actually enjoy, make it enjoyable? So in our core values, we have one is called have fun. So this is about creating fun for customers. Like, you can't just go to a shop and buy stuff, just very transactional, serving as a retailer. You can't do that. But we want customers to have fun. The shopping experience is more than just buy stuff and get to stuff. Actually have some fun, have some personality. So that's reflected in the way of our branding, our creatives and our campaign execution, all that sort of stuff. But also internally, when you have fun with customers, we have fun ourselves as well. So our creative team, they were having a meeting about Valentine's Day. What can we do for Valentine's Day? Sure, yeah, we got the Valentine's gift guide, or probably do a sale. What else can we do? And then they came up with an idea as a matchmake mania. So it's like, can you find the perfect pair of products? And so about, pairing and stuff. And kind of like they found a few products themselves and giggled, so this is so funny. And I said, what do you think customers will come out? Okay, let's do a competition. So, they're having fun. We're seeing customers kind of putting some, customer-generated content. We're having a laugh to reading it. Wow, it's also, getting customers to explore our range and finding out things and what else is on the website, So it's like that culture we're creating, not so serious, have a bit fun, like enjoy what you do and that sort of a culture we're creating here that probably helped with the example of the customer creating video for us and creating raving fans of Mighty Ape.
Yeah, 100%. It truly resonates. Like even for myself, I'm like, everything makes sense. Even the fact that your job role is called a chief grip. Like, the whole brand just seems to be so well put together, that brand experience, and then those four pillars that you discussed as well, like how that all resonates and the overall experience. I think you guys as a company has nailed it. Just quickly, before I ask the next question, I just want to let everyone know that's listening live that they're more than welcome to ask Gracie a question. She's a very busy lady, so this is probably your chance to do so. She works for a very, very big company, so please do if you have any questions. Now, just really quickly, just around that, I guess that customer experience again, like taking user feedback, and I know that you've got about 50,000 Google reviews alone on Mighty Ape. Like, very impressive, but how does that play a role, and how does that data play a role in shaping the evolution of Mighty Ape, the website, the services, and everything else that you guys are now doing?
I think you know, we want to hear from customers, and we try to open the channels to hear from them directly. Our customer service team is very much, you know, on board sharing the feedback, good or bad, and important things, which team to share with to solve problems. So it's a very open and honest environment here at MyTA. On social media, it's a two-way communication, so the customers can talk to us directly, leaving comments directly on posts. It's all public for everyone to see. And our social media team having fun with customers, having a bit of a conversation there, and it's all, you know, it's all a bit of a, you know, having fun and creating that environment. From leadership perspective, you know, we hear from the teams when there's, you know, things are not going well, you know, going well, that's great, but we also want to hear what things are not going well, because that's when we can really improve or fix a problem or improvement. Post-customer delivery, we do this survey just to see how it went for the customer. So those sort of feedback actually channel through. We have a sort of a, you know, using Zapier to feed through for the leadership team to see the actual individual customers, what they say about their shopping experience. So when you scroll it, like there's the, you know, 10 out of 10, 9 out of 10 sort of reviews, which is good. So, you know, this is most of things are going well. But the really important thing to see those ones and twos and the customers who aren't happy, it's a small percentage, but that really gives you an idea what things we can improve. We maybe ruin someone's really important anniversary or something. That's everything to that person. It's really important for us to pick up those signals and then investigate. Is there something we can do for that customers and actually for the future customers if it's something we're actually not doing well enough? This is very much inspired by Dylan Bland. I have to mention this guy because he has so much, you know, the DNA of MyTA is a reflection of him. So he's written articles specifically about customer service on Medium, and which I read and share with the team. Just like, you know, how you look after your customers. Don't just get, you know, pat yourself on the back. Oh, we're 90% plus for the customer satisfaction, but it's those smaller percentage of customers you really want to see what's happening there and what we can do.
Yeah, that's incredible, and shout out to the founder on that too, because I guess case in point. Like, you know, people say that you learn more from your mistakes than your success. And I think that's a real testament that you are actually reading those reviews. And I think what we're seeing in the landscape, especially in e-commerce these days, is like post-COVID, where you started to get that bit of a disconnect with customers because in-store wasn't necessarily an option at that point, was that, you know, listening to your customers and allowing that to change the landscape and how you should be going forward is now it's actually a necessity. And I think what Mighty App has done is they've always had that as part of their, you know, I guess their values. And that's why you are what you are today. And again, you know, I'm just absolutely, yeah, just stoked to be having that conversation, because I've seen it and I've had conversations with people about it, and hearing it from you it just makes a lot of sense. So I guess like the last question just around that customer service, but like beyond transactions, right? Because obviously transactions is a really big part of it. How does Mighty Ape actually engage with customers to build long lasting relationships, loyalty as an example?
Yeah, beyond transactions. So our staff, to start with, a lot of them are fans of MyTA themselves. So they we got a staff who love collectibles and love books, love toys, love Lego. Like, they are representation of our fans and knowing what they are looking for. So we use different ways of sharing that passion. So transaction-wise, yes, it's there, people can find stuff, but we talk about the interest, we share, you know, like the industry news or passion or excitement of things. Social media is a very big platform, obviously, for us to share that passion through our staff. We're connecting with the customers. We hold some events at our HQ, you know, to connect with the customers directly. Events like Armageddon, for example, is another opportunity to meet pop culture fans. there are more things obviously we can do. I think there's, you know, beyond the transaction, talk about your passion and interest, really connecting with our customers and our fans. We're building a tribe. This is why people rave about you, because they feel like you know exactly how they feel. This is the tribe of the interest, of the passion, of the hobbies. And that's what we're trying to create.
Building a tribe. That's so good. I love that, to be honest. I really love that. So now I kind of want to touch on some innovation that you guys have been doing. So there's been a lot of innovation at Mighty Ave. I don't know if people are mostly aware of it, but you touched on the delivery side of things before, and I want to bring that back to surface. So what has Mighty Ave done to be above and beyond, right? And talk to us about Jungle Express. How did that come into play? Why is that important?
Jungle Express is our baby.
Yeah.
Love it.
We can see the poster in the background. We can see the poster in the background. Yeah. Yeah.
Jungle Express. You know, like when there's obstacles and challenges, often that represents opportunities for person or for business. So Jungle Express journey actually was born from obstacle. During COVID, as we know, things were very challenging with supply chain and distribution. So one day, the courier network in New Zealand hit the bottleneck. They just couldn't deliver, just didn't have the capacity to deliver all the parcels people are, you know, wanting to be delivered. So they gave a cap to all their business partners, including us. And we were like, okay, we understand where it's coming from, but we've got thousands of orders customers are waiting for to be delivered. We just have to find a solution, especially that's during the lockdown time. People actually need those products to entertain their kids, or for whatever reason, they can't get out of the house to shop. So we started looking at, okay, we need to get those customer orders out, and how do we do it? That's kind of the concept that before the brand was born, the concept that was born to deliver the parcels to customers ourselves. So we started experimenting, and luckily at the time, Kogan, who's our parent company, was doing the same thing. And they were a little bit ahead of the curve, already using the platform and doing something already. So we got on a call and set out like sort of their learning curve and what things do and don't do, and kind of shorten that learning curve to launch this service ourselves. So behind the scene, we were basically delivering all these outstanding parcels, even though it's not called Jungle Express. I remember it was a Labor weekend in 2021. You know, during lockdown time, there's no like sort of a set time you go to work and not go to work. Everything is just like so scrambled and unusual. I got a message from Dylan on the messenger. And me and Tim, who's head of marketing at the time, he said, hey, I'm trying out this platform. As you know, we're trying to deliver our own parcels. Would you like to try to try this and see how it works and if it's good? And I was like, yeah, sure. You know, like I think Tim wasn't too keen at the time because it was his birthday. And then when I said, yes, hell yeah, I'm coming to deliver the parcels, he's like, his fear of missing out. I was like, okay, I'm coming. So Dylan came with some donuts because it's his birthday, and then we each given 10 parcels to deliver. And the leadership team, well, not leadership team, we have almost like a squad, a COVID squad, all the people in that channel, and just kind of being very responsive if something happens. They were all sitting there watching the computer, tracking our deliveries. And when I came back from my delivery, I see some conversations commenting about my deliveries, why they sent me all the way to the end of the peninsula. Because I asked for deliveries that I don't have to negotiate for packing. I'm not very good at packing, so sent me somewhere far. So that's what they did. And I remember between the deliveries, it was like back and forth and back and forth. So I'm sure I've been to this place like about 20 minutes ago. And then I guess during that process, learned a lot about the app, and happy to contribute to some of the optimization of the route through my experience. So that was kind of the birth of the service. And then we decided, hey, this is something probably customer would really like to have. What about launching our own branded service as a, you know, upgrade option? And then Jungle Express was born. The first Christmas we had, 2022, it was a learning curve. We'd never had a Christmas. We had a sort of projection what the volume is gonna be like, and then we got it wrong. But still, we're trying to, you know, deliver as many as possible. So that year, the peak day we deliver something like 960 parcels in a day. And last Christmas just passed, our peak day we did 1,900. So this year, a massive increase just shows you the demand is really out there. So we're very happy to be able to offer this service, which is same day delivery. And we further expand to the large items to deliver really fast called Jungle XL. So yeah, it's a service everyone's incredibly proud at MyTA. We basically started from scratch and end-to-end manage end-to-end and learn about all these things with logistics and delivery. So many things that I had no idea with delivery, kind of like, oh my God, what happens if you the handle of the van came off? Should I go into that fence or not? There's a dog, what should I do? You know, things like that. It's like it's a complete new business, but we're ha very happy to be, you know, offering this service ourselves and having the lever to offer better service to our customers.
It's so admirable to hear that, because again, like that whole conversation that you basically talked about was that you started off with the challenge and thinking about what customers want, right? And I think that's kind of case in point of why, you know, that customer experience is always at heart with Mighty Ape, and what are you doing to try and solve those problems? But fundamentally, the experience that adds to Mighty Ape is significant. Like, I did it myself. I was part of that 1900 purely because I'm bad at buying Christmas gifts and I do it on the 20th of December, right? But it was there, it was available. And it just, again, it just creates so much trust towards that business. But I just love the innovation because you're right. Like, it is like starting a whole new company as such. It's a courier company. There's logistics, there's problems, there's things to consider. And it's just amazing to hear it from yourself. The other one, which maybe people are less exposed to, but is pretty mind-blowing, is that it doesn't stop there with innovation. You've got something new, something for customers to connect even deeper on, and that's Mighty Mobile. And obviously, this is a probably even more logistically technical as well. So what is Mighty Mobile, and how did that again come into play with the innovation?
So we've been the, you know, the leader in terms of e-commerce and retailing. We want to expand our offering and vertical, you know, just one part is, you know, the risk factor, just kind of a diversify your portfolio, looking at growth. The other thing is we just might want to be innovative and explore new ideas, which is one of our core values, explore new ideas and think outside the box. So this came about again, our parent company Kogan has already done the Kogan Mobile. So from the technical point of view, there's a lot of things we can learn and shorten the learning curve to launch such a product. We think there's a gap in the market, which is stop worrying about, oh, reaching the cap of your data or speed getting throttled. You should have experience that's just do whatever you want, not to worry. Unlimited data, max speed, and just done with it. You know, this is the future. We see this is the future. So this is sort of the service we wanted to offer, and it's in line with our MyTip retail offer, which is being fast and, you know, best service possible. The main challenge with this product is like obviously we are not expert in mobile. We won't have the resource to build the infrastructure to actually offering that core product. So we had to choose a partner to offer this. And we're very lucky to be working with One New Zealand, which is the fastest mobile network. This is tested by third party. So, and also their values is very much in line with MyTip, which is about prioritizing for customers. So with all this alignment, we think it works really well for us to explore this vertical with our partner at One New Zealand. And that's how we launch. And we're having fun with the brand as well. It's always nice to kind of start playing around, have some fun and new business opportunities and new customers.
But it also kind of merges in the entire Mighty Ape experience again, though, right? You've got a lot of gamers playing online, and like, do you take that as an advantage that you've got those customers on hand that you can market to and talk to?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's one of the considerations. Was we do have a big reach in New Zealand, and they tend to be people sort of I guess the data usage heavy or very, like digital native, a very, I guess, affluent online type of media consumption type of audience. So that aligned with the proposition with Mighty Mobile. Again, it's that seamless experience, right? Start with the I guess almost niche, like this type of audience, but we think in probably 3, 4, 5 years time, this is just gonna become the norm. You shouldn't be worried about your data hitting the cap or speed gets throttled. You should just be able to just do whatever you want. And that's just gonna be the future for everyone as well.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what Mighty Ape has up their sleeve for the next 3 to 5 years, to be honest, because yeah, I guess the you're continuously adopting these like new technologies and new systems for scalability, right? So I guess like you've been a busy person. You've also taken on a new Christchurch warehouse as well, and what's the story behind that? Is that just purely just to get closer and closer to customers down in the southern region of New Zealand?
Well, capacity is definitely a sort of a pressing issue for the last few years. It seems to be repeating whenever, like during my time with my team, we moved a couple of times, and every time we move, it seems like the space increased so much, it's empty. It's like, what are we gonna do with all this space? Our previous warehouse on Rothwell, I remember we had a cricket pitch inside the warehouse because we got space. Like, what do we do? Okay, cricket. That's what Simon likes as well. But then it's quickly just the warehouse is packed full. Oh, we need more space. We need more space. And so with our current warehouse, which is 10,000 square meters, initially, sufficient. And then last a few Christmas, we start just maxing out and look at what's the next step for Mighty Ape. What's the next warehouse? Is a bigger Auckland warehouse, or what are the options we can consider? So one of the ideas came up is like Christchurch, South Island customers. So it's like setting up the South Island distribution center. Serve South Island customers a lot quicker because I feel like people in South Island, unfortunately, so many companies, if they're based in North Island, they're just unfortunately having that extra time and for their deliveries, and they kind of miss out on the best service possible. So having the warehouse there will serve South Island customers a lot better. But also, people probably don't always think about it's actually help with North Island as well because we can shift the capacity serving South Island to South Island. That means we have more capacity for our North Island customer as well. This is a start of our, I guess, a journey of operating multiple warehouses. So it represent challenges. It's a bit more complex calculating how you have the optimized level of inventory in different locations and stuff like that. So we're very much at the start of the journey. And there's a lot of demand from the customers as well. Like everyone's looking forward to the pickup in Christchurch, and that's our roadmap. We need to offer that. And there are quite a few things that we need to implement ASAP to get our South Island to really serve the vision we have to have better service level to South Island, better service level to the North Island, and a lot of work to be done here.
Well, we're looking forward to it. Well, for the South Island listeners, potentially I'm pretty sure they were pretty stoked with the move. And again, like those case in point, like it's about applying what you've built around that service layer and bringing that to life or bringing that to surface and down in the South Island. And I think that's I feel like a broken record here, but again, like when businesses are listening in, everything just seems to be centralized around that kind of customer. So is it, I guess, as sort of final words as such, but is there tips or anything that you can give advice for other retailers out there or people, I guess, entrepreneurs that want to be like a Mighty Ape, that want to be customer centric? Like what sort of guidance as the chief gorilla, what would you provide them?
Back to the basics. I think stuff like you can get carried away with all the noises on the market, what the others are doing, and what's the latest, and we've got to do this and that. You sometimes get away, you kind of forget why you're the whys, the original meaning of doing things to start with. So I think every now and then it's worth to sort of step out and think about from a bigger perspective why we're here for the first place. And putting customer first, like our core value, winning customers for life, is so deep embedded that ask anyone at my team, they would know about it. So it really helps to like decision making. It's not just coming from me, it's coming from everyone, for people in the warehouse when they're dispatching goods, for finance team processing supplier invoices. But they would like, when they need to make a decision or having tricky stuff, they will just ask a question: am I doing this to win customer for life? Either you face customer directly, that's easier to answer yes, no, or indirectly, how that's contributing eventually to the customer, the service level, then that you're going to have your answer. So there are probably hundreds of decisions that are made every day in the organization, and it's not coming from one person or from their manager. It requires everyone to be thinking the same way: small decision, big decision. So I think really important to have that back to the basic, everyone understand why we're here in the first place and what help us to achieve that is really important.
So just on that though, so how do you balance the innovation that you're applying, right? So you're thinking ahead the future, but you're also thinking back to the basics and the values, et cetera. Like, how do you sustain that connection? Because sometimes you can blur the lines of one when you're thinking about the other.
Culture probably is my answer. So there's so many things you can't stay on top of, like the technology. For the audience who didn't know before this podcast, I told Ryan, don't go too technical because I actually don't know too many technical things. But the culture is really important, having environment that you have a diversity of people who are the specialists in their field. So you've got specialists, know all the latest marketing automation tools and technology. You got people who are really passionate about collectibles and knowing what's coming up, the latest release and the trend of the market. You've got people in the warehouse who know what's the best way of picking products and the best technology or machinery out there. So you're really creating a culture, an environment, people feel free to express their ideas. Not every idea is going to become reality. Some of them probably a little bit, oh my God, this is probably going to be 20 years before I can do that. But really, you want to create that safe and trusting culture. People can throw big ideas at each other and they're not going to be laughed at. And some of them will just become reality. Some of them might be stages before they become reality. So I think it's really important for innovation and technology to embrace having diversity of interests and people, creating that safe environment and culture. People can share their ideas and dream big and not just, getting sort of a red light, can't do this, can't do that, then people will stop sharing. So I think that's really important in terms of innovation, technology, having the people and having the right environment for them to share ideas.
Yeah, perfect. It's like that involvement, right? Like, so I'm sure that there's some people in your company that are just so ingrained in technology and innovation, and allowing them and allowing everyone, it doesn't matter if you're top of the top or, if you're just working in the warehouse to have a voice, multiple voices are so valuable in it. And it shows, right? So you've got a culture that people are just fan based off exterior being your customers, but you've also built such a strong internal culture with your employees. And I think, again, that's such a testament to what you and Mighty Ape have built. And that's why you are who you are today. And I think everyone should admire that overall. And then probably just the final sort of question for you that I'm more interested in, maybe I'm being selfish, but what has been the highlight of Mighty Ape, in your opinion, from your 12, I believe it's 12 years at Mighty Ape?
Ooh, my 12 years at Mighty Ape highlight. Well, there were probably too many highlights. I think the culture side of things I'm incredibly proud of, and people are passionate about what they do, what we do. It's just very, satisfying personally for me, and also, for their personal life. It's just some sort of fulfillment. They're working on the things they love. Christchurch opening definitely is a big milestone for us. It's always been one warehouse. We keep growing, like space wise, and just get to a bigger warehouse, and this is the first time having a new warehouse and second, operating two distribution centers at the time. So very much at the start of the journey, I'm looking forward to how we can, achieve what we really wanted to achieve in a few months' time. Yeah, that's been a very exciting project to work on.
Cool. Perfect. Well, Gracie, I'll leave you at that. I know that you've probably got a lot of things on your plate that you need to sort out. But I would just like to personally say a massive, massive thank you for joining the show. You absolutely smashed it with your answers today, by the way. And yeah, we're just very stoked to have you, and hopefully other people tune in. Hopefully others are very inspired by not only what Mighty Ape is and what Gracie and the team at Mighty Ape have built, but also Gracie's story, to be honest. Like, it is very, very, very cool. So again, thanks for your time, Gracie.
Thanks, Ryan, for having me here. And the guys, I overdosed. Shout out! Thank you for having me here. And it's really good to connect with you guys. I know you guys fairly well, and you do some great work out there. Some really cool projects. So looking forward to what you guys, continue to contribute and shape the e-commerce space in, not just New Zealand, worldwide. So good work.
We'll try our best, but thanks for the shout out. We appreciate that big time.
Awesome. Thank you.
Awesome.